Driving back Dapplebag.
They've got something new now. It's called the Press Box.
You're back in the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Hey, here's a suggestion as we get the second hour of the program going. If you've got the nutsack to get on the air or get on text line and anonymously shoot us a message, sign up on twitch.tv and join the discussion, because I guarantee you, you would get annihilated making the comments that you make. Nick and I are here until 4 having a great time with solid broadcasting voices, individual takes, and knocking it out of the park on a minute-by-minute basis. And we do it all with you guys, loyal and not very much owning their takes type people, and that's what we like. News of the day, veteran quarterback Alex Smith has announced his retirement from football. He made the comeback complete. I agree with the people that have suggested the Comeback Player of the Year award should now be named after him, because that is a nice big deal. Recovering quarterbacks Pat Mahomes ahead of schedule after toe surgery. According to Andy Reid, he has full movement back in it, so that's a good thing. If you're a Chiefs fan, Tom Brady and his minor knee surgery, he's doing the same. He's recovering well. And then there's this information about Deshaun Watson. Rusty Harden obviously had motives behind wanting to get the females that had filed the suits names.
Yep.
And now it's coming out, at least in step one, as to why. Because in a motion filed in response to the civil situation, and I'll give you the short version, Rusty Harden's team claims that the plaintiff's actions that are involved in some of these suits are inconsistent with their allegations. Some of them bragged about working with Watson. Many of them offered to work with him again. Many lied about the number of sessions resulting in harm. Others told their friends and colleagues they were in it for the money. And others got caught scrubbing their social media and attempting to do so after they realized they were about to get exposed. It's about to get even nastier, only this time, maybe for the first time, Deshaun's side's going to have some things they can come out swinging about instead of being defensive and fending off all the punches that Busby and his crew were throwing.
Yeah, so here's what I'll say about this, and I'll set this up a little bit here, so just give me a minute. So Rusty has officially responded with the motion that he filed, and now Busby has already responded to his response. We'll get to that a little bit later. Charlie didn't really want to mention the names. I don't see why it's that big of a deal of the plaintiffs, considering it's something that's public anyway. I'm not going to go through all the plaintiffs and how he discredited them, just a few, but I do think they're interesting, and it basically goes to what Joel Blank was just saying. So one of them, by the name of Shanae Lawson, was disgusted. And then she bragged about the therapy sessions to friends and family and even claimed that Watson was kind following the session. Tanji Johnson, there was a security guard that said she was happy and laughing after the session, and she didn't want other therapists to work with Deshaun. So that's an interesting one. Chelsea Bell, two sessions that were, according to her, increasingly uncomfortable, but she was willing to invite Deshaun Watson to her home twice after that fact. Kimberly Bryce reported to a family member that she gladly would work with Deshaun Watson. Erica Chapman, apparently to Erica, Deshaun was hounding her about getting another appointment with her, but apparently she failed to mention that she openly showed up to his house to give him a massage before he could even book it. So he's saying there's at least five of the women that followed up with Deshaun Watson despite being quote unquote or allegedly sexually assaulted or harassed by Deshaun Watson. We knew that this was coming, and we knew that Rusty was going to try to discredit all these plaintiffs. The one thing that I want to ask you about, Joel, is that who has been the face in terms of the first one that was
Ashley Solis?
But like discrediting her is like way deep into the motion.
That's why though. But
It's not up front.
It's not up front. But for those people that take the time, they realize that she was the. If you look at what they kind of discrep what she said, One, she said she wasn't in it for the money, but then they clearly state that she asked for $100,000 and she would have gone away.
Yep.
So they call her out there. Then she says she can no longer practice the art of massage, which she loves, because of what she's gone through with Deshaun Watson, but yet proof shows that she's been practicing as a massage therapist ever since and yep. hasn't missed a beat. So, and it goes even further and deeper, but this is exactly what's going to happen. And I think what's important to take away from here is it's going to be a mudslinging contest, just the way Busby thought he was getting his shots in. Now this is a chance for Watson's camp to kind of fight back with Rusty Harden. Here's what the hope is, Nick, and I think that the one thing that you take into consideration, damage is done on the reputation of Deshaun no matter what. Financial loss is going to be there, and I don't know yet.
No matter what, for sure.
But in order to, I guess, use the term escapability for Deshaun, where you escape any legal decision and or any legal actions, if that would ever get to that point with talking to the authorities, what he's trying to do here and what Rusty's trying to do here, I think, in the court of law is weed out the 22. And get it into a focused number in the single digits. And if he's able to do that and get it to a handful or less, I think that's when you'll see a settlement situation take place. Because then it doesn't get all the way through the messiness and the publicity and the media of the court of law. He still can escape from the NFL's long-term ramifications, punishment-wise, by saying, I was never convicted of anything.
Yep.
He can take his six games or whatever like Zeke got without ever being convicted. And then he can move on and hope to resurrect his career, get his money, and continue to play the game that he loves. That's what I think this is about. From a Rusty perspective of, look, 22 is just way too many guys. I mean, way too many cases, way too many situations, way too many women. So with 22 being too many and also too much money to pay out to all of them, this is a way of being able to kind of
consolidate,
weed it out. Yeah, a lot of we saw some of the plaintiffs already say, I don't want any, I'm going to pull out for the time being. But I think from Rusty's perspective, if he can get this down to a manageable number, I would think that there's a buyout number that's going to be had so that everybody can kind of move forward.
I tend to agree, man. I mean, I tend to agree. And I think even if he's not successful at that, reducing it, I still think my take remains. He probably will get a suspension from the NFL. It probably will never go criminal. He'll probably spend a lot of money, both in lawyer fees and settlements, and he'll probably be playing in a different jersey. I mean, I've been saying this all along. And I really think that's the possibility. I think even in Busby's mind, he knows deep down. He even said, look, this is not about money, right? This is about women empowerment. So we're not doing the criminal route. So look, I mean, that's a great question.
Because you look at it, and a lot of these in the response, the documented response that they put out today that was made public, a lot of credibility issues were called out. And also the fact that a lot of messages were sent in which the plaintiffs were bragging about what they worked with, what they did, and also the fact that they had no intention of pursuing any of this until they realized the financial gain, and they said they were in it for the money. I think from a Deshaun perspective, in retrospect, if you could have looked at it and said, if he settles right away with Solis, whether it be for $100,000 or whatever, and I'm looking at it just from Deshaun's perspective, you may have never seen the other 21. And if you did, you wouldn't have seen 21, but you might have seen a few others. But because you didn't, and then you look at all the legal bills that are adding up on a daily basis, and it's not just Rusty. He's got, I think, five different people working on this. So the legal hours and that bill is astronomical. On top of that, you lost over $8 million in endorsements. So from a Deshaun perspective, the damage financially that you will never undo is probably over $10 million already, and you haven't settled yet.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. That's a lot. I remember, again, that big contract has not taken effect yet of his. He's still on his initial contract, so that's really interesting. Even one that was really interesting to me was the plaintiff that either is lesbian or claimed to be lesbian said that his body was beautiful and soft, and that in the event that she wasn't lesbian, that she would totally jump on him.
Charlie didn't want to say that?
Well, he didn't want to mention the names.
Oh.
Which is fine. I mean, would you expect Charlie Palillo to say something like that? But it's crazy. It's getting juicier, and that's pretty much the update. The Busby side of it, I haven't got an opportunity to, like, read it as much. But, yeah, that's kind of the update in terms of the Rusty Harden side of things.
I think that here's the other thing. I think that when you look at it too, even if you paid Solis $100,000, and if there were, say you had to spend $1 million, and that would have cleared up the majority of all the different, the ones that came out of the woodwork after the fact, or any other ones that wanted to join in after you settled with Solis, whether she was in it for the money or not. I think at the end of the day, when you look at it, your reputation isn't tarnished because this never becomes public. Because you obviously have an NDA that goes with this that says, we'll settle with you, but this is the end of it. And if we ever hear about it again, there'll be legal ramifications from us to you. So instead, you rolled the dice and you took a massive gamble and you're paying the price for it. And on top of that, the one thing you can't put a dollar value on is this reputation. Because now, as much as you lost $8 million in endorsements, going forward, what company is going to jump out of the woodwork and say, I want you representing us and being out in public in commercials and speaking for us and wearing or endorsing
initially,
our product?
Initially, no. Once it goes away and he's still playing in the NFL, if he's still playing in the NFL, time will heal those wounds. But if he's not playing in the NFL, of course no one's going
to. I'll give you two ends of the spectrum, Nick. I'll say, to see your point, Kobe Bryant was able to bounce back. On the flip side, Michael Vick returned to play. But Michael Vick never bounced back from that imaging and
marketing. Right, but here's the difference. He wasn't the same player when he came back either. Deshaun Watson is probably going to still be a good quarterback. Kobe Bryant was still an amazing player following that situation. Michael Vick wasn't. I would imagine prison time hurt him a little bit, okay? I mean, I'm not saying it's a completely difference, but it's fair. I just think if he's going to play in the NFL again, I don't see how time doesn't heal those wounds. If it doesn't go criminal and he's still in a NFL uniform, whether it's the Houston Texans or something else, I don't see how sponsors do not want to capitalize that, even though it's a bad look. Now, I can see a season go by and he doesn't get sponsors. I can see two seasons go by and he doesn't get sponsors. But if he's still allowed to play in the game, the money will eventually come back. This will just be a massive speed bump for Deshaun Watson.
We'll see. Because I think this could put a fast forward on the entire situation. It's been dragging along, and we know that daily and weekly we've had more and more slow updates. I think the fact now that you're putting names with the allegations and Rusty and Deshaun are fighting back, that you're going to see this kind of weed itself out and also kind of fast forward the timeline. I don't know that we get to a standpoint where it's all settled before the draft and suddenly the Texans could possibly find value in trading Deshaun Watson again. But I think that at least now it's going a little faster and there's chances that more can be rectified and more movement can happen.
Yeah. There's also a possibility that he serves the suspension and plays, but some of these cases are still pending. Like, there's some lawyers that say some of them might take years to settle. But I don't think if it takes years to settle, that means he can't play. You know what I mean? There's got to be something illegal about that.
We continually talk about this, whether he's convicted or not of any of these. And all it takes is one. And look, we're not discrediting the plaintiffs because there's some legitimacy in some of these.
We're just giving you the report.
So we're just giving you the reports and we're speculating from both sides. When I said what I was saying it from Deshaun's financial situation. But all it takes is one, and this could really take another turn. But at least now, instead of trying to decipher all 22, Rusty and Deshaun are trying to kind of organize and realize which are the legits, which are the ones in it for the money, which can we discredit the quickest and get them kind of off to the side so that they can do what they have to do. So there's that. We've got more to get to in the second hour of the program. It's a three-hour extravaganza, which means we take you all the way till 4, and there's opportunities for you to join in. 713-780-3776 is the number you get in with a text and or a call. Otherwise, it's Twitch and Twitter. It's Nick and Joel. It's the Press Box. It's ESPN.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks!
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
So back, second hour of the program, 3 hours to talk. Nick, myself, Press Box. Like the name or not, it's what we're going with. And as part of it, we were talking earlier about kiddingly, we were talking about top five shooters of all time. And a lot of you guys were chiming in with other names, and we appreciate that. And there were some great shooters. Anybody that says LeBron or Michael Jordan's out of the discussion going forward because they were scorers, they're greatest of all time. We're talking about pure shooters.
He wasn't a pure shooter, no.
So
Michael Jordan was not a pure – he was a good shooter, but he wasn't a pure shooter like that. No.
I will hear arguments for, amongst others, Peja Stojakovic, Mahmoud Abdur-Rauf, the former Chris Jackson of LSU. I threw out the name Chris Mullin, one of the greatest left-handed shooters of all time from anywhere. Another one of those 90-50-40 guys in that ballpark. So we were throwing out those names. Now, part of the reason why I was tongue-in-cheek because Nick and I knew what was coming up later in the show. Yesterday, if you missed it, and I don't blame you if you did, it was a beautiful day outside, and not many people are going to stick around inside to watch Nets in the heat.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant got hurt again. This time it's a thigh contusion. Everybody was losing their mind. They wanted medical breakdown. You know what? Guess what? He's hurt again. It's a bruise. He got kicked or kneed in the thigh. I'm sure he'll be fine. He's probably going to miss even more time. It's what the Nets do. But come playoff time, they'll probably be – if this was a playoff series, I think he'd be playing. He'll be just fine.
Yeah.
On top of that, couple things, morsels to take away. Outside of Bam Adebayo hitting the game winner. And oh, by the way, they play the Rockets tonight, and now Bam's sitting after hitting the game winner. Not sure what that's. Maybe they think that they're taking the Rockets for granted, and that's going to be an easy W.
Maybe.
And they don't want to play in back-to-back, whatever the reason. That wasn't one of the morsels except for the fact that he hit the game winner. And the Nets lost, because after the Nets lost, he just can't help himself, Nicholas. Daryl Morey decided to tweet a big, bright, colorful, animated tweet that says Miami love because they beat the team that his Sixers are competing with for the best record in the East. Stop it, Daryl. Stop giving the other teams billboard material. Stop acting like you're a player in the middle of all this. Just do your freaking job and stop doing this stuff.
It's essentially a gift that says Miami love and it's kind of moving back. I see what you're saying. So you don't like that.
No, because it's none of your damn business. You don't see other GMs in the league poking the bear. This was like when he was all worried about taking shots at Steph Curry, and I had to blast him that time because when Steph thought that, you know, what was it, that there was never the man walking on the moon, I said, instead of worrying about the moon, why aren't you worried about the Suns? Because your Rockets are a game behind the Suns.
I remember when you
worst record.
I remember that.
Yeah, stop doing stupid stuff and just do your job and let the cards fall where they may. That's just dumb.
Yeah.
On the topic of dumb, Nicholas, the guy we were talking about that got hurt, Kevin Durant, who can't get out of his own way, is at it again.
He probably should probably stop doing these podcasts. Jeez.
First it was the burner accounts. Then it was the whole Michael Rappaport thing recently with the DMs that were exposed about his less than stellar language and colorful commentary and all the other things that he was sorry his fans had to see. But now he does it again, and it's self-inflicted. He does this podcast, and as part of the podcast, the question was raised to Kevin Durant. And if you want it, it's called the $1 million sign worth of game podcast. Kevin Durant is asked his top five he's ever played with in the NBA.
Top five players you ever played with?
Kyrie.
Mm.
James.
Who?
James.
James. Mm-hmm.
Harden.
Steph.
Steph.
Clay.
Clay.
Yeah. And I'm gonna go Serge Ibaka.
Damn.
Damn.
I thought somebody else was going to go into that from just, L.A., but that's
so
the story.
I'm just, all right, so.
I forgot somebody?
Yeah, to me, I thought you was going to say, I ain't even going.
He goes on further, and then there's a lot of cussing involved where they remind him that he omitted Russell Westbrook. Then he acted like, oops, yeah, my bad. I'll pull out Ibaka, and I'll put in Russ. Then to make it worse, he goes, no, put Russ above Clay. I don't know if he was trying to take Clay out or not, but the fact of the matter is, you know damn well who you played with in your career. You're like brothers in the locker room with whatever team you've been on, And whether you've had beef or not, the guy's going in the Hall of Fame. Y'all had some great runs with OKC, and you did it purposely.
Well, not only that, the guy has the nerve to ask, oh, I forgot somebody? You threw Serge Ibaka in there, bro. Like, what are you talking about? Did you forget somebody? And the guy, obviously, I don't know if they're friends or has some sort of relationship. He wanted to follow up, but he didn't want to aggravate Kevin Durant. It was very indicative of that from the video.
Now I give that guy credit, but here's the thing, Nick. As we've learned, and again, unless you're really, really tight with KD, you have to ask that. And you have to bring it back because you know what you're going to gain from it no matter what he says after that. He's getting some of it with what we're talking about it now. But if he had gone back at him and gone at him, back at him kind of hard about it.
Oh, it would have been bad because we would have been playing the audio.
It would be all over the place.
All over radio. Podcasts would be playing it. And he's already, he just got under another controversy about social media and stuff like that. That's the last thing he didn't want. I would encourage him not to do these podcasts, to be honest with you. Because he doesn't need it. He's fully paid. He's one of the best players. Probably the second best player in the league. You can make the argument. I'm not going to sit here and start a debate, but he's one of the best players in the league. He's got sponsors up the ass. He's going to, he's in a market like Brooklyn. He's in New York. I don't know if you need to go on these podcasts unless they're your boy, because they don't make you look any better, KD. It makes you look worse 9 times out of 10. He doesn't do well with answering questions.
Here's the other thing. We mentioned this with the Aaron Wilson situation. You're good at what you do in your profession, but you have to take into consideration when you delve into the world of podcasts and radio interviews and other things, you either have to be very prepared or very savvy and intelligent in realizing if you say the wrong thing, there's no do-over.
No.
And there's instantaneous reaction.
Yeah.
And the fact that you did what you did again, yet again, and didn't think about it. We talked about this with the Deshaun Watson situation, too, where whether it was his people and the people around him with his agency and his PR people or otherwise, or just him personally, you had to be smarter than to put in writing on DMs and text messages and or put it out there with audio clips and video clips where you're going to get exposed and you're going to have ramifications. Now, Nick, if I'm Kevin Durant, that thigh contusion is going to last just long enough for this to die down. Because when you're hurt as an NBA player, you don't have to do
talk
media.
To the media. No, that's the thing. But and I was going to actually ask you that. Let's say there wasn't a thigh contusion or an injury situation. Do you think anybody would have asked that question referencing that podcast? Do you think any of those guys would have brought the, hey, by the way, you're on a podcast, you know? Not to call it a random podcast, like to belittle it, but I've never heard of the podcast. I'm not trying to be rude.
Fair.
But you're on some random podcast, and for whatever reason, there's like a negative connotation to podcasts. We're kind of guilty of it too, you know what I mean? Are you some Joe Schmo blogger or some Joe Schmo podcaster? You're not on a radio platform, but that there's kind of sometimes there's a negative connotation, not justifiably so, but and so it's kind of, I guess it would be kind of weird for a beat writer to say, you know what, on this random podcast, you kind of snubbed Russell Westbrook out of the top five players that you've ever played with. Do you want to expand on that? And I don't think he would respond well to that, but you're right. The fact that he's hurt helps with that a little bit. Yep. Maybe there's other storylines that could pick up in the meantime.
Oh, he's hoping for this thing to go away.
Just like the Michael Rapoport situation.
Now, on the flip side, too, you do realize that, you realize this. As listeners, you realize the media's going at Russ now, too. Hey, did you hear what Kevin Durant said?
Oh, for sure. He's getting tagged on everything.
Because remember now, the first matchup between those two guys was nasty. And they were getting into it verbally. And they were bumping into each other. And there was no love. And it's kind of subsided. Remember at the All-Star game, it took the rest of the All-Star players to kind of push them together and give them so much of a hard time that it finally started to break the ice a little bit.
Yeah.
Subsequently, since then, it's died down quite a bit when they've met up with their respective teams. This is going to fire it all up again because Russ is one of those guys, as we know, takes everything personal, doesn't forget anything.
And he doesn't like him anyway, so it doesn't take much to go at KD. Like, he hates him. So.
Stephen A. went at Russ a week or so ago. Russ and his wife went at Stephen A. hard. So don't think this is going away from Russ's perspective either. But Kevin Durant, to our point, can't you just realize enough's enough and learn your lesson?
I forgot somebody.
Don't do it.
I forgot somebody. That's like asking me, who was a part of the usual suspects? Where there was Joel, and then there was me. Oh, I forgot Lamin. I forgot Barry. Oh yeah, I only worked with them for like 3 or 4 years.
See, you asked me, and I just said, well, there was Trey, and there was Barry, and then occasionally we had Mikhail on.
Then,
oh wait, I forgot Nick. That's right. There was a T-shirt. I saw it. My daughter still references it. By the way, Taylor mentioned it yesterday.
What? Oh, that Sour Patch Kid?
I found an article on the fact that there might be new flavors for Sour Patch Kids, and I told Lisa. Yeah, I said Lisa. And you know what Taylor said? Yeah, Daddy, like the Sour Patch Kids that Nick still owes me.
Dude, she's going to get bitter if I don't. I keep forgetting.
She's got a mind like a steel trap. You still owe her Sour Patch Kids.
Well, when I do reward her with those Sour Patch Kids, you and Lisa will be mad at me because it's going to be way too. It's going to be like a massive box. And I'm gonna
Lisa
make
ain't
sure.
Be mad at that. Lisa loves Sour Patch Kids.
I'm gonna make sure that she knows that she got a massive box of Sour Patch Kids, and Joel and Lisa were the ones that prevented her from having all of it at one time. That's what I'm gonna tell her.
Okay. See how that
I'm gonna cause problems in the Blink household. That's what I'm gonna do.
We're gonna start calling texters, putting them on the air, see if they have the balls to talk. All right. 90 in the books, 90 still to go. Second half of the show comes up next. Don't go anywhere. It's Press Box ESPN.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now. Do it. Do it. Do it now.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Hey, 90 in the books. 90 still to go. Here comes the second half of the show, The Press Box on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. Always appreciate you guys participating as part of the participation. And I almost threw out the whole, who would you rather, Harden or Curry, because that was brought up on Twitter. But then we got to this whole list of greatest shooters of all time, because when you start talking about Steph and what he's done with 44 threes in his last five games, and it's weird because the one game it was a complete offshoot of everything else, where he had 11 and 10, and then he had one game where I think he only had four or five, but the rest of the games were either eight or more, 44 in five games. And again, brought up the topic in my mind of the great. I used to always fight for Ray Allen, and now it's just.
It's too hard to make that case.
As good as Ray was, Steph Curry is the greatest shooter of all time. And it's also because the league has changed. And when Ray came into the league, it wasn't a three-point shooting league. And so you didn't get the volume of threes that Steph has gotten. But make no mistake, no matter what level of threes Steph has gotten, I mean, he's gotten to a number where he's going to break Ray Allen's record because. In basically half the time.
I think you were justified in your Ray Allen argument. Really, this started basically. I'm not saying it started. I mean, you've had it basically all the way up until the suspects. But if you look back, it's been four more years of stats that Steph Curry was able to accumulate. So he really didn't have enough years under his belt at first for you to make that claim. So I felt like you were right and justified pretty much the entire time. But when you have the championships and the numbers that he's produced over the past 3 years, it starts to become inevitable and unavoidable.
The level of not only the volume of threes, but where he makes them from.
They're ridiculous.
The range, the difficulty level, the confidence level he has when he turns and looks away when he's making them because he knows they're going. It's all the above. And you also forget the fact that because of two severe ankle and foot injuries that caused him to get away from Nike and when he signed his deal with Under Armour, a lot of people don't realize – part of it was they had to work with him and his doctors to design a shoe because they firmly, whether they admitted it completely publicly or not, and that was at a time when Nike really had some issues with shoe design for ankles.
Uh-huh.
In fact, the Pistons trainer, I think, was the first one to ban his players from wearing certain models of Nike shoes because of the level of sprained ankles they had, that he missed significant time over at least 2 years because of injuries, or the numbers could have been even greater.
Oh, yeah.
You look at that and say, and then because it's a three happy league now, his numbers are through the roof. It's just that you can't have the argument you once could have if you wanted to fight for a Ray Allen.
Yeah. I mean, it was all about him consistently putting up those numbers, and that's basically what he did. I mean, if you take out that consistency factor, I'm not sure we're having that same conversation, and maybe Ray Allen is still there, at least in your mind. But it's unbelievable. But do you think, I remember Mark Jackson got into some not controversy, but he was on the broadcast and he says, I love Steph Curry and everything about him, but he kind of hurts the game. I think it was dumb for him to say that on the broadcast, but to a certain extent, I won't say he's hurting the game from the way he shoots three-pointers, but I do agree with Mark Jackson in the sense that kids are looking at him and they're practicing these shots when they could probably bettering their game in other areas, but they're focusing too much on the three-pointers and maybe they don't get as good as they should be. I can see that happening. Outright saying hurting the game might have been a bit of a stretch.
The growth of the game, because this is what we used to call the Sports Center babies. Sports Center babies, and Bobby Knight was the first one to get off my lawn guy, but he hated the fact that when Sports Centers first came on the scene, he really hated, because he preached defense and he preached doing the little things. And then all the kids on sport would watch Sports Center, and all they'd see was the buzzer beaters and the dunk shots,
and the highlight
film layups and everything else. And then that's what they wanted to do, and that's what they emulated, and that took Bobby Knight out of what he wanted to do and what he wanted to coach and what he wanted to teach. And there's still, to an extent, when we started talking about even looking at some of the progress of young players, I think the youngest ball started out that way, trying to make every highlight tape by doing everything like outlandishly from like 3 from 45.
Kind of hurt his cause.
And all of a sudden you kind of wrote him off going, he's never going to be anything, because that's all I've seen his social media and the videos of him playing. And all of a sudden, someone got to him somewhere, and he was going to be Rookie of the Year this year until he hurt his wrist in Charlotte.
Yeah.
Because he kind of got above that. So you're right. And Mark Jackson, you have to really preface that on national TV differently.
I think he got too much heat, but I think it was bad, though.
I don't disagree with you. So Juan wanted to get in here before we get off the topic of pure shooters. Juan, what's going on?
Hey, I just wanted to throw it out there. I don't know if it was mentioned, but every time I think of pure shooters, and Joe, you've watched a lot of basketball, haven't you? Does the name Detlef Schrempf ring a bell?
Yeah, Detlef Schrempf is
from the Sonics.
And Pacers. Good, and he was good. But to me, it's like I think of a guy that every time you saw the ball in his hands, you cringed because you knew at any moment if he gets it off cleanly, it's going in. You know, it's like back in the day, Andrew Toney was a guy for the Sixers that anytime he touched it, it was going in.
Yeah.
Craig Hodges from the Bulls, who won multiple 3-point shooting championships. He just, no matter what he did elsewhere in the game, they had a spot for him because he was deadly from three. Steve Kerr, some people would think, fits that mold.
Yeah. At least he was clutch. Well, at least that one where in the Bulls, when he was playing for the Bulls, and I don't think the ball was intended to go to Steve Kerr.
Yeah, he always jokes about Michael, and he being ready to shoot it. But I think those are the kind of guys we're talking about. You know, we talked about Troy Daniels, the sniper from the Vipers.
Oh, yeah.
Where he still has a place in this league because all he does is shoot threes, but he does them with crazy range. There's a reason why Steph's brother, Seth, is still in the league, because early on he got looked over. He's too small. But guess what? He's a Curry, and he shoots it like Steph. Maybe not as good, but close. And that's why he developed into a guy that's gotten a good contract, that's a solidified player in this league.
Oh, yeah, particularly this year and a little bit last year. His shooting percentages from long range has always been pretty consistent for the most.
He's making Daryl look good.
Without a doubt. I mean, the degree of difficulty isn't there when you compare him to his brother, but he certainly can make them. There's no question about it. There is no question about it.
Dr. Dre says Dale Ellis. Absolutely Dale Ellis. Dale Ellis was a guy, and he had issues off the floor, but on the floor, Dale Ellis was one of those guys. That was an expletive. Every time he touched the ball, you knew it was probably going in.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of guys that I'm talking about. So if you got more to throw our way, we can always get him in there. But, yeah, and there's also certain guys that kill certain teams. I mean, if you want to throw Detlef Schrempf in there, I'd probably throw Dirk Nowitzki in there before I'd throw Detlef in there, because Dirk was just a killer. Whether it was the 1-foot fadeaway step back or straight on threes, Dirk could knock them down too.
Mark Price, Mitch Richmond, and Peja are three other names that were introduced. Yep. They're good names. They were good shooters for sure.
But I'm talking about the greatest of all time.
I wouldn't. That's my point. I wouldn't put that.
Remember how we talked about with Vince Carter, longevity gets you advantages too?
Oh, yeah.
I think the fact that Jason Kidd and Jason Terry played in the league so long
helps them a lot.
Terry was a better shooter than Kidd, at least throughout his career. But they're in the top three or four all time in 3-point shooting made threes, not percentage. And that's what it is. It's made threes. If you look at percentage, it's a different story. That's why I bring into the equation the 90-50-40 formula, because it weeds out a lot of those guys.
I didn't realize he was that. I mean, I obviously know who Detlef Schrempf was, but I didn't realize he was that deadly from shooting. I knew he was a good shooter. I never viewed him as like a bad shooter. I just didn't know he was that like solid.
And you touched on it, Nick, and I think we kind of glossed over it too quickly. But from more current, J.J. Redick and Kyle Korver have to be in that mix.
Oh, yeah. They shoot. I mean, when people recruit guys like J.J. Redick and Kyle Korver, when throughout the year, particularly the past 3, 4, 5 years, if it's not the reason, it's one of the main reasons
he
why
still
they
get a job
shooters.
And a look at a job.
It's because they're shooters. Yeah. They can see. They can shoot the damn ball. Like, you got to be able to shoot the
damn ball.
Jamal
Crawford kept getting jobs until he was almost 40 because he was a shooter. Now, someone keeps texting Dan Marley. No. Dan Marley, because from a percentage standpoint and even numbers of made threes, was he a good, better than average, especially at his position? Sure.
Yeah.
But I don't consider him one of the greatest shooters in the history
of the game. He's probably a better clutch shooter than shooter, wouldn't you argue?
Now, an unfortunate death driving too fast in the offseason on the, I think, the Autobahn. But Drazen Petrovic was a guy that could have been one of
We'd still be talking about him. I really do. I really believe he would have been one of the early European players that we would still be talking about. If it didn't happen to it, what happened to him?
He played for the Blazers right before I got there. And he was a legend in Portland, too, because they discovered him. And most people remember him with the Nets, but he was that good when he was with the Blazers just coming up.
He
was just starting to blossom when his life was taken. So there's a guy definitely on the list for sure.
I don't want to leave you hanging, and we'll probably wrap this discussion up. But we got Johnny who wants to get in on the NBA shooters discussion. Johnny, you're on the press box.
Yes, sir. How y'all doing today, man? But y'all kind of, I mean, the last few words y'all were talking about was going to be my next thing. Joe must be old as I am, because I didn't really think nobody would even say anything about Drazen Petrovic, because he was a beast. I mean, if he would, like you say, he wouldn't have passed on, we would probably still be talking about that guy, because I mean, it was evident he was taking off, and That's my comment, but Joe took the words right out of my mouth.
Appreciate it, Johnny. That wasn't me. Someone texted that, so that texter must be at least 80. But at the same time, you know, Jeff Hornacek, and Dre brings it up, Hornacek in two different places. And look, when Hornacek was with the Suns, that's when the Suns and the Blazers had a rivalry, and I was working in Portland. Jeff Hornacek, you did not want to see with the ball in his hands.
The Blazers didn't want to see him shoot?
Oh, my God.
They hated seeing him shoot. I could see that. I could totally see that. I totally forgot about. I always remember him, obviously, from his days in Utah?
Yeah, in Utah. And Iot says Gary Payton, but the thing is, Gary Payton came into the NBA without a jump shot. Matter of fact, he had a hitch where it was
like a Lonzo Ball
hitch.
His
head would snap. No, it was all with his head. But I don't want to say this as a negative. So I don't want to make the comparison I want to make. But right at the release of his jump shot, he would snap his head back.
Are you talking about Muhammad Abdul Rauf?
No, it was. See, that's where I didn't want to go. I didn't want to say.
Because he had the twitch. Well, I'm not making fun of
Rauf
him.
Rauf had Tourette's. Gary Payton did not. But it's also a fair comparison because that's what. And so Tim Gergovich, who was a long time lifer NBA assistant coach, Gergovich gets credit for fixing both Gary Payton and Jason Kidd's jump shots and made Gary Payton into a shooter. Came into the league without a jumper.
Well, I'm not mad at that. I'm not mad at a player.
Percy Hawkins was suggested. That's a good one.
That's another good one. But I'm not mad at a player that doesn't necessarily have a jump shot and develops. At least work on it and get better at it. I'd wish Ben Simmons would do something like that.
Oh, my God. I wish he could just find some. I wish he would just have the confidence to shoot something outside of 10 feet.
Yeah.
Percy Hawkins is in the conversation. And don't forget the reason why Steph and Seth are on the list. Del Curry was a damn good shooter, too.
He was. But I think Steph Curry, I think he benefited from the fact that Del Curry wasn't like a superstar. Usually when you're not that great, like you're an average or slightly above average player in the NBA, there's a chance that your son might be better than you. But when you're amazing like Michael Jordan, doesn't that mean your son's going to like suck basically? Isn't that basically
we
like
said the only real
is LeBron's kid? One of them can play.
Bronny can play. I always say Bonds and Griffey Jr. Other than that, the Currys, yes, but it's few and far between when the kid comes by and can do something even close to what daddy did. And someone said Calvin Murphy was a great shooter. Absolutely, Calvin Murphy was a great shooter, especially when you consider his height.
Well, and his shooting percentage at UH is like super good. Was it his free throw? Maybe it was his free throw shooting.
One of the greatest free throw shooters in the history of all time. But at Niagara, people don't realize his senior year, he averaged 40 a game. Mark Price, 90, 50, 40 guy. Yes, he was. So Mark Price, at least because he consistently did it for a year, but he was always a great shooter.
That's who I train under. When I trained to get better at my free throws,
yeah.
I train under Calvin Murphy. He knows me. Me and him are boys. We're cool like that.
I'm pretty sure if I called him right now, he'd say
Nick. He wouldn't dispute it.
He'd say Nick who?
He wouldn't dispute it. You can
and
call him right
sure
now.
He wouldn't pronounce your name correctly. Your last
There's
name.
No way in
no,
hell.
No,
there's no.
No
way in hell he could say Sharara.
He's a music aficionado, and you know, Sha Na Na was a group.
No.
Well, look it up.
Sha Na Na?
Sha Na Na was a musical group and a TV show. Bowser.
Were you listening to Sha Na Na?
Sha Na Na. My parents watched it. All right, there you go. Someone said the Mannings. You're right. The family name there, those are all brothers. Let's worry about their next generation. We might see a Manning quarterback in the next couple years. We'll see how good he is. All right, rolling through hour number two, 3 hour program. Much more to come. It's the Press Box ESPN.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Back on the box. The usual boxers. Suspect boxers. Everybody's having their fun today. It's fine. You know what? It's still me and Nick no matter what. And we still love Barry.
We do. We did. I found the Sha Na Na intro, but I don't know if you're familiar with it. Would you remember it if I played it?
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. Shut up. Good evening and welcome, everybody. Hey, look, before we start, I want to tell you that the producer of this show told me I ain't been coming off like a nice guy.
No. Are you familiar with that?
I think that's the Bowser guy.
Yeah.
But like poor Marines on Twitch telling me they had actual hits and they were actually like a popular group. I just knew that they had a show and they all looked like the Fonz except for, and the one outstanding quality was that guy, that the Bowser guy that tried to be the tough kind of guy.
It is Bowser. Bowser who
was
doing the intro.
He had the teeth of Freddie Mercury.
Yes. Right? Agreed. Yes, I just saw that on the YouTube video, and apparently, and this is according to Wiki, they got their initial fame at Woodstock, and it was because of Jimi Hendrix, or at least Jimi Hendrix helped them rise into the spotlight. So,
yeah, I'm not aware of all that, but I knew that they used to have a show.
There is a show, and there's a musical group. There's a television series, and there's both.
In the late 70s, I knew that it would occasionally be on in my house when I was little. Okay, so I wanted to make sure, because that was a good text. And then we got another text that said, Archie's the dad, Eli Payton the kids for the father. Absolutely, you're right. I stand corrected because I'm not waiting. I don't have to wait for Cooper's kid now. You're right. The Mannings, the Griffies, the Bonzes are head of the list. And we've had this discussion in the past. But it's not, you know, when we talk about Jordan's kids, when Nick brought up Bronny James, everybody's already anointing. Now, granted, he was a sophomore on his high school team, but he wasn't even starting on his high school team because of the talent that was already there, that has been there, including, I believe, KJ Martin now of the Rockets. So we'll see what he progresses to be, but the jury's still out until you've done it at a level to where you're going to be a top five draft pick, and then that's LeBron's dream to play with his kid. We're still years away from that before we can pass judgment.
Yeah, and that'd be awesome if LeBron can even play with them. Even if LeBron is past his prime at that point, that would be a pretty cool situation to be able to play for your son like that. That's cool.
847 brings in some hockey. When you're talking about Bobby Hull and Brett Hull, I'll allow that. That's absolutely a good call.
Okay.
So we'll throw that into the mix as well. And it's crazy how sometimes we get to see. And I knew, and you know, I thought of this, but I was like, nope.
What?
Ayotte had to go down the road of Magic Johnson's son, and we're not going to mention what he said. But, yeah, I mean, like Jordan's kids. One did end up playing at, I want to say, like Central Florida and Illinois. But, of course, never scratched the surface of being anything close to dad.
Oh, yeah. So, look, it happens. It's not.
Kenyon Martin's son, KJ, is.
He got some of it.
That's
just
good.
He just didn't get his height, you know.
Not all the height, but he got more hops. But
and
we'll
he got
see
some
how
skills
he progresses.
From him.
Yes.
So got him a job in the NBA.
Yeah.
I'd be okay with
on
it.
On shooters, a sleeper pick from MPJ30 on Twitter. Eddie Johnson. And the Rockets got a small glimpse of later years Eddie Johnson. Eddie Johnson was a stone cold sniper.
Speaking of, is he still on the Phoenix broadcast?
Yes.
So then, oh, that's good because the Suns are doing good. I mean, that's a good thing for Eddie Johnson. Now he gets to talk about a team that's actually relevant in the NBA.
He also, I think, with Mark Termini, does a Sirius XM NBA show.
Okay,
so he still stays relevant with his NBA talk that way. But EJ's great. We can get him on the show sometime.
I'm not mad at that.
He's really good. And our chum says the Ripkins, of course, with Cal and Billy. After Cal Senior, so that's another good call.
Agreed.
Yeah. So we've had those discussions going along the way.
So what's up with this Aaron Donald situation? First, he was accused of assault. Then it turns out it was, according to the guy, is a guy that looks like Aaron. Like, how did Aaron Donald get caught up? Apparently, he was trying to break up the situation, and I think he's got an apology. But how the hell are you just going to go outright accuse him if you're not sure?
I heard the Blitz talking about it too. Did you see the, you know, everybody was talking about, did you see the punches Aaron Donald threw? But there was no clear cut video that you could say that was Aaron Donald. And you would think people know who Aaron Donald is because he might not be tall, but he's a pretty clear cut physical specimen.
I thought he was taller too. He's only 6'1", apparently.
In heels, maybe. But yeah. But at the same
time, even
shorter. I don't know that he's even that tall.
Really?
But just think about how physically dominant he is when you see him working out. He's a different kind of body type because of his strength.
Yeah.
But the fact that the plaintiff's attorney had to come out and basically apologize and say we got the wrong guy, and that Aaron Donald actually tried to help the guy after he got pummeled and help him to get help and wasn't that guy, that's a pretty big swing and a miss if you're going to publicly throw the guy's name out.
I mean, he did punch him to the point where one of his eyes were shut, so maybe he didn't see him. I mean, his face looked
bad. Did Aaron Donald punch him? Or?
I know, I'm just being stupid. You know, I mean, like, apparently he was the Good Samaritan in the whole situation, and the guy even said he looked like Aaron Donald.
Can you imagine having to bite your tongue when going, no, F no, that wasn't me, and there's no way you're going to put my name on that, and then
your agent is telling you, don't tweet anything.
Yep. Don't say that you've always treated women 100% on the up and up. Don't say anything like that, and make sure your social media has been scrubbed, just in case.
But I didn't punch him. Are you sure you didn't punch him? Because Deshaun has been lying to his attorney quite a bit. Are you sure? That's hilarious.
Yeah. Clarence says, I'm thinking that the guy got jumped, and when he looked up, the only guy he saw was Aaron Donald. No, I'm thinking that.
Eye was shut, dude.
I'm thinking the guy thought, if I'm going after anybody, I'm going after the money. Let's see, of all the guys that I know or don't know, who's got the cash? Well, we're going after Aaron Donald. That's what I'm thinking he thought.
It's very possible, though, if that was the case. I don't know if that's the case. I don't think so, but I'm sure at the very minimum, he just wanted someone to pay for pay the cost. The guy got punched. He clearly got assaulted. Clearly needs hospital attention.
Does this remotely sound like other cases we've talked about with local angles? I don't know. We'll just leave it there. Okay, so that's some of the other news of the day. As we always keep you updated, we're close to a top of the hour break. When we do, we'll get you back to some of the other things that have been top of mind in sports today, including Alex Smith stepping away and Gonzaga star Jalen Suggs entering the NBA. But Gonzaga is reloading yet again. Don't know if we're ready to call him the Duke of the West Coast, but they continue to get better on a year-by-year basis. And Mark Few and his staff has done a phenomenal job of reloading yet again, so we can talk about that as well. Before we get to all that, I want to tell you about the people at New Breaks. Look, New Breaks has got a concept that is absolutely where everybody should be when it comes to coming out of the pandemic. We know that we love curbside delivery on groceries, and it saves us time and the energy of having to go shop when you could be multitasking, doing other things to off your to-do list. You can do the same thing with your brakes. You need new brake pads, your brakes done. You don't have to go to the shop. Take your car, sit and wait in the waiting room, drink bad coffee while you watch bad television on uncomfortable furniture. You can have the people come right to you. They are certified technicians, and brakes is all they do. And they're going to do it in your garage, in your driveway, at your job, Wherever you call and tell them to be, they're going to meet you and they're going to do your breaks while you are doing other things. And it's basically the same kind of work by skilled professionals. They're not going to upsell you on other things because all they do is breaks. The work they're going to do is going to be top quality products that are competitive prices with those other break shops. And the best part about it is you don't have to go to them. They come to you. It's convenient and the breaks are fantastic. Check them out today. New Breaks, NUBreaks.com. Mention ESPN 97.5, save 10% right off the top. But the bottom line is they are going to do great work. Technicians that breaks is all they do is the main takeaway with the same products and the same quality all the time. New Breaks, NUBreaks.com. Check them out today.
This is ESPN 97.5.